Good Weekend Talks is a new podcast from the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age.
It's a deep dive, once a week, into Australia's definitive stories.
On Good Weekend Talks,
we take a long-form look at the people,
places and issues
that matter to you.
Devour the issue in depth.
And learn the backstory and craft behind some of Good Weekend's most popular pieces.
It's your favourite magazine, brought to life for your ears, your heart and your soul.
Subscribe now, wherever you get your podcasts.
From the newsrooms of the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age, this is Please Explain. I'm Tori Maguire and it's Tuesday, March 31. For the duration of the COVID-19 crisis, Please Explain is coming to you 5 days a week. As of this afternoon, Australia had recorded 4,514 cases of coronavirus and 19 people have died. I'm now joined by our Chief Political Correspondent, David Crowe. David Crowe, thank you for joining me again on Please Explain. I haven't spoken to you on the podcast since before things really escalated and life as we know it changed. I can see on the Google Hangout that you've grown a coronavirus beard.
For a short time only, Tori. More out of laziness during these working from home times because I was just basically so busy.
It's incredible, isn't it, that we're all sort of working from home, often in our activewear, while covering the biggest story that any of us have ever covered in our careers. Let's get right into it. I want to talk to you about the $130 billion lifeline that Scott Morrison announced yesterday afternoon to try and keep Australian workers employed throughout this crisis. Did you have any idea that an Australian government would ever do something this enormous, and particularly this government?
No, it's such a huge move. It's genuinely unprecedented, and the scale of it is just such a reminder of what a problem we're facing at the moment with this crisis. What I found frustrating, but frustrating for logical reasons and understandable reasons, in the last couple of days, it was very hard to get a clear fix on where the government was going on this. And that's because the situation was so fluid and there were different schools of thought about how big it had to be and how it should be structured. Not blown away by the $130 billion size, wouldn't be quite the way to describe it, but it was an incredible moment when you think about the fact that we've had weeks of debate in years gone by and weeks of newspaper coverage about a tax cut worth $10 billion or $20 billion or $30 billion. This thing had to be designed very, very quickly. I think we'll find that there are some problems with it, but I think that's understandable. Everybody's got to understand that this happens so fast in response to a crisis that is a moving target.
Can you explain to us what this putting businesses into hibernation strategy means and how it's supposed to work?
Well, it's supposed to work by allowing employers to scale down their businesses, keep their employees on the books with the help of the government money to then pay their workers so they don't lose the connection with their workers. Now, I think the JobKeeper payment, which is $1,500 per fortnight, is really the fundamental mechanism to allow what Scott Morrison calls hibernation. But I think we've got to be realistic about what hibernation can mean or can't achieve. And I don't think it really deserves to have the status of an economic, a detailed economic strategy. Hibernation is really a message to Australians that I think Australians need right now about an assurance from the government that there is a way through this and that there will be a springtime at the end of it. It's a message that's important because at this time, you don't just have to have the details of the economic plan. You've got to have that big picture statement about how the country's going to get through what is basically an awful crisis.
Mm.
And hibernation for some companies may not mean survival because the challenges are just so great.
The big gamble in all of this is putting a six-month figure on it. This $130 billion is going to go out the door extraordinarily fast. What are experts saying about whether 6 months is the right amount of time? Is it possible that this lifeline might have to be extended well beyond 6 months and therefore cost another $130 billion?
I think it's quite possible. I think the response from business has been really informative. It's been incredibly positive, but also we've seen a very large uptake. Now, there are some technical things about this program that are going to be fascinating to see in reality. A big company over $1 billion in revenue has to show that its sales are declining by 50% in order to justify getting this money for its staff. A smaller company with revenue of under $1 billion has to show that they're getting a revenue fall of 30%. So there has to be a proven impact to their bottom line from the coronavirus crisis. We're looking at, based on my discussions with epidemiologists, you know, the scientists are really providing guidance here on how long this crisis could last. We're not looking at just 6 months. Even if we get on top of the virus within the six-month time frame that Scott Morrison talks about, that doesn't mean that suddenly sales jump again at those big and small companies. And so we're going to see a situation where the money for staff, for 6 million staff over 6 months, will still be needed when we get to September and October and around November, because there'll be companies that will still be incredibly weak at that point. And I think it's going to be very difficult for the government. And I don't think this is a criticism of the government at all. It's just the facts of the landscape that we're now in. The government will have to make this decision in September, October, about whether they're continuing this assistance for some companies that have not yet emerged at that point.
David, the total spending announced by the Morrison government in the last few weeks is now at $194 billion. Where do they get that money from?
That's all going to have to be debt. And it's not the sum total of what's happening here, because, of course, the Reserve Bank is putting in $90 billion in lending to the banking sector, plus the federal government is doing some contingent loans, which will show up on the budget as contingent liabilities. Now, that's a separate, that's tens of billions of dollars that are separate. But in terms of direct spending, it's $194 billion. It will have to use debt, and that's why the debt issuing agency within the government is a key member of basically the Council of Financial Advisors that has been working with Josh Frydenberg and Scott Morrison to design all these plans. There's no way to do it without debt, and that's why many see it as a partisan political point, but I think it's highly relevant. The government says that the budget is in a reasonably strong position to allow this. It's close to a balanced budget. So when Australia goes to the international debt markets to fund this program, Australia is in a better condition than other countries. And I think the debt is fundamental, because we are going to see countries that have problems raising debt to finance their way through this. There will be a debt crisis at some point for some countries down the line.
Do you think, and I don't want to ask you to psychoanalyse the Prime Minister, but Scott Morrison has had to come an extraordinarily long way in a very short period of time on his thinking about things like debt and budget management. It was only a couple of months ago that he was still promising to bring the budget back into balance, into a surplus even, and now he will go down as the biggest spending Prime Minister in Australian history. That's had to happen fast. How do you think that process has worked for him? Has he had a lot of people in his ear telling him what to do, or is it something that he's had to come to by himself?
I think a lot of people in his ear. There have been a cacophony of voices, to be honest, because everybody's had a view. One of the most interesting moves early on, or in the last couple of weeks, was when Christian Porter, as the Industrial Relations Minister, started talking to Sally McManus from the ACTU about working together against this crisis, and then brought in Greg Combe, former Labor Cabinet Minister, as a middleman of sorts, so that they would all be able to work together. Now, that provided a different way of getting input into government policy, and I think that highlighted the importance of the wage subsidy. It wasn't where Scott Morrison was at a few weeks ago. He was very much about helping small businesses and hoping that big companies could get through this, but things have changed. There have been a lot of important input into the government. We saw the Australian Chamber of Commerce and Industry press for a wage subsidy last week. So with all that feedback coming in, it really moved the government along on the path towards what you would not normally have done in normal times.
David, just finally, you, along with lots of other commentators and experts, have been calling for the government to release the modelling that it is working on, relating to the number of cases it thinks is possible and likely under our current trajectory. Why do you think it's important for the government to release that?
One of the reasons is that I think the government needs to level with Australian people about what we're all facing. I think one of the reasons why we see people still out in large groups, not, you know, living by the social distancing rules, is that they don't really get it. They don't really believe about the seriousness of what we're facing. One way in which to ram that message home is to release more modelling about what the reality says. And we saw in recent days the head of the NHS in the UK talk about 20,000 deaths. We haven't seen similar modelling in Australia about what we're really facing, but I think if that was public, it would highlight the reality and highlight the need for action. But there's also another reason. There are a lot of experts in Australia, epidemiologists. They feel shut out at the moment. We need their skills as well. They're scientists, they're medical experts. We need their skills. We need their voices if we're going to get through this. I think it's in the government's own interest for there to be a bigger debate. Sometimes that could lead to inconvenient questions, but I think that's the way a democracy works. We should accept that. And we've got a $130 billion spending plan, $194 billion when you've taken into account the other measures. Nobody gets to spend that money without transparency. We need transparency about the scale of the challenge here in order to justify the scale of the response.
David, thanks so much for joining me again. I'm sure we will check back in with you many, many times over the next few months, and I expect to see that beard getting longer and longer.
Its time has come, I think. It'll be gone within days. But thanks, Tori.
Today's episode of Please Explain was produced by Anu Hasbold and Amelia Maguire. The journalists, editors, photographers, producers and tech team at The Age and the Sydney Morning Herald are working tirelessly at the moment to cover the COVID-19 crisis factually, fairly and comprehensively. For coverage you can trust, visit our websites or buy our papers. To support our journalism, you can subscribe via our homepages or just search, subscribe, The Sydney Morning Herald or The Age. I'm Tori Maguire. Thanks for listening.